podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Lantronics, maker of the XPrint server. Print from any Android phone, tablet, Chromebook, or Kindle Fire to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. And by Full Sail University. Full Sail offers both online and campus degree programs centered on real-world experiences in the entertainment, media, arts, and technology industries. For more information, visit fullsail.edu/AAA. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 171, recorded on Tuesday, July 22nd, 2014. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
Yay, it's good to be back with you, Gina.
Great to be back.
And Ron is not here. Ron is like trading places with you, Gina. He's in San Diego right now, where you used to live at Comic-Con, enjoying the festivities there with Image Comics.
That jerk.
Yeah.
It's great. I miss Comic-Con. I wish I was there. Yeah. But good for him. I'm sure that he is currently being trampled by a herd of fans on the Comic-Con floor.
Yeah, so. Managing comic
chaos. Good luck
chaos.
To you, Ron.
Exactly. Yeah. Ron will be back next week, I believe, so we're all good there. But this week, we are welcoming to the show not one, but two guests, and we'll tell you why here in a second. First, welcome to the show, Jason Salas, interactive media director, news anchor, sports writer at Quam News in Guam, and author of an awesome book, which we're going to talk about in a second. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Oh, thank you so much, Jason. Very nice to meet the both of you finally after watching the show and being a super fan for many, many years and everything like that. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Right on. It's good to have you here. Also with us is Alan Furstenberg, your co-author of this book that we're going to talk about here in a second, and also Google developer expert for Glass and Google Plus, creator of the Voto Collaborative Productivity Glassware. And did I hear correctly in the pre-show, you're the first Google developer expert for Glass? Is that right?
That's correct.
Excellent.
I was the first one. We currently have a second one, and we're always looking for other great Glass developers to join the GDE program.
Fantastic. It's good to have you both here. You guys both are authors of a new O'Reilly book called Designing and Developing for Google Glass. That's kind of the tie for why we have you here today. So it's really good to have you on board today. Thank you for joining.
It's great to be here.
We have a lot to discuss. We're actually going to have a great conversation about developing for Glass and kind of, you know, maybe the changes to the Glass ecosystem or the Glass world in the past month since Google I.O. In light of Wear and a bunch of other topics. But we have a lot of other things to talk about as well. Look at version L's enterprise features. Google kind of spilled some beans on that. Preview of the OnePlus One. In fact, I have it right here, and I've been using it only for a day, but I've got some thoughts. It's a pretty hot device. The new NVIDIA Shield tablet, and just so much more. I don't know. We got a lot to talk about this week. What else is new? But let's get right into it. Let's start with the news. Kind of feel like we need to come out from that into like an amber overlay or black and
that
white.
That is the coolest thing ever. I have loved that since the day you debuted it.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Kosmiki is the creator of those drops, and he spoils us. he just like dashes these awesome drops for us for free.
Yeah, well, maybe Jason, cool. If you could voice it like in that 1920s, you know, newsreel voice and everything, that would be so awesome.
I wish that I could pull that off and not make a complete fool of myself. So I'll pass it to Gina. No, you don't really have to do it. You can just talk in your normal voice. It's okay. No pressure.
At Google I.O., I guess it was a month ago now, we heard a little bit about how Google was working with Samsung and integrating their Knox technology into Android L. And we've just gotten a few more details about how that's going to work. So Google's given us a few details. And here's what we know. And this is going to make Android basically easy to use for enterprise customers. essentially, this is how it's going to work. This is kind of simplified, but this is how it'll go. The new profile features, which is now only on tablets, which lets you, you know, create multiple user profiles on Android, is basically getting juiced up. Users can create a managed profile with IT control mechanisms in place that let you do things, enable or disable other apps and set restrictions on them. Now, imagine your IT person at work making this managed profile so that you can deal with work data and keep in a very sandbox protected profile on your device while you have your personal stuff running side by side. Your IT person will be able to configure intents to be forwarded between the primary account and the managed profile. That this managed profile will be able to wipe all the data associated with it. Jerry Hildenbrand at Android Central did some thinking and came up with the possibility that this might give the enterprise the capability to control the intent system within Androids, which would prevent things like an employee sharing a Google Doc from the business account with an app or service outside of the enterprise list of green-lighted apps. So this is essentially making Android first, it solves a problem for consumers, which is that, you know, I think I always say the booty call and the duty call, you have to carry two phones, right? Like your work phone, or your personal phone, you better have them all on one device, all on your Android device, but it'll also sort of satisfy your IT department's, mandate to keep the company stuff protected. So that's what Knox is going to look like inside Android. What do you think? You think this managed profile thing is getting too weird and, I don't know, Windowsy, or do you think this makes sense?
Well, personally, I think it makes sense to bring the profiles into the phone specifically for this reason. I think before this, it was kind of Google probably only pushed it out to tablets because they assumed that, well, tablets are a shared device. You know, a lot of times in a household, a tablet's used by multiple people. So it makes sense to bring profiles there and kind of split it up. Now with, you know, this whole kind of their acquisition of Divide a few months back and kind of the push for the enterprise on the mobile phone side of things, I think it makes perfect sense to integrate it with the profile in the way that they're talking here. And I think it's essential for Android at this point. The enterprise is a requirement, I think, in this day and age. If you want your mobile OS to really thrive, you want enterprise to be open to the fact that you might have one, that you bring your own device and it's an Android device. Okay, we can play nice with that. We can make sure that you're not going to spill our company beans, even though it always ends up happening in some way, but this will help to prevent that.
You know, what I really hope is that they take this technology and they don't say, oh, it's just for enterprise use only.
Yeah.
I really hope they do say, hey, families, if you've got if you've got a need for it to support a parent and a kid profile, we finally have the tool for you to do that. Because that's something that parents have been asking for ages. And that honestly could give them a real competitive edge if they opened it up for that purpose. I'm not sure they will, but it would be great.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. Whether I like it or not, my kid gets a hold of my phone all the time. So there we go.
I think this also speaks to the fact that, like, you know, the man for whom I was best man in his wedding, he works for IBM. And, you know, he was telling me that, you know, every single time, you know, that company really encourages the whole bring your own device to work mentality now. But they say when you come here, like if you have an iPhone, we are going to strip the thing down to basically being a telephony device and maybe texting. And that's about it. We're going to put our own flavor of Unix on it. We're going to put our own apps and everything like that. And we basically restrict anything that would be considered recreational. I think if they do this and make it almost like dashboardy, not in the sense that it has to be web-based and everything, but make it very easy to do and to deploy, you know, throughout very large organizations. That's a very positive step forward. But yeah, like Alan was just saying, you know, I mean, there are so many different services that are applying this model, not even for, you know, enterprise platforms, but even look at something consumer level like Netflix. Now you have, you know, do you want the Netflix proper experience or do you want the Netflix kid experience when you first start?
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
With completely different permissions across, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
And I think that actually raises the point also. One of the problems that we have seen with the managed profiles so far is that they don't support application profiles very well. So I hope that Netflix sees this and gets on board saying, hey, if managed profiles are a real thing, then we'll tie our profiles to it as well. Mm-hmm. And I think once we actually start seeing the applications understanding it and using it, we're going to get some really, really useful features out of these sorts of things.
And can I be the brave one and say it, but how is this going to play into the whole Google Apps thing? Or will that be like the next foreseeable, you know, stepping stone? It's going to work on, you know, like certain Gmail accounts, you know, that propagate that anybody can sign up for and everything? Or, you know, is it going to be Google Apps right off the bat?
It's a good question.
No, that's a good question. Yeah, it's a good
question. It always comes back to that.
Mm-hmm. When has anything been Google Apps right off the bat, Jason?
Yeah,
that's true. Although this would be a pretty important one to have right off the bat if they're coming out with the security features. Like if they came out with those security features and then were like, but you can't use it with Gmail, so you know, whatever.
That's going to be the one thing people rant and rail about.
Yeah.
From the get-go.
I completely agree. Real quick, before we move on, and I failed to put it in the rundown, but I also saw an XDA article that basically is saying that in version L, the permissions system is going to match what you get on iOS. In other words, if you're running an app and it calls for permission for calling up your location via GPS, it's very possible that in version L it's going to pop up that window and say, do you grant permission for this? And it's a one-time grant thing. How do you guys feel about that? Do you think that's going to kind of help security in other ways as opposed to what we get now, which is just like a laundry list of permissions that we agree to when we install an app?
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
I've been saying that for a while. I mean, the long laundry list of permissions. It's like, why does Pandora need access to my contacts? Like, I can't imagine a scenario in which it needs that, right? But when I go to share a playlist or radio station or whatever, and it says, hey, can I have access to your contacts? Like, that makes sense to me. I'm all for that. I'm really happy to hear that. I hadn't heard that. So thank you, Jason.
Here, I'm putting
my night.
Brian, I'm putting a link in. It's to an Android Authority article, but it has a screenshot of the Maps implementation of this, so you can see. And it's a permission. This app determines your phone's location and shares it with Google in order to serve personalized alerts to you. This allows for a better overall app experience. Do you accept or decline? And this is kind of what you see on iOS. I'm such an iOS noob. Like when my mom was in town, when I was down and out with my eyeball, she was in town and she bought an iPad while she was in town. And so I got to try and like teach her how to use an iPad, even though I'd never used one before. And I found it so interesting using one pretty much for the very first time for this very reason. Like I'd install an app and it would pop up the notification and say, do you accept, you know, this permission or whatever? And at first I was a little annoyed, but then I was like, you know what? There's no ambiguity here. You know exactly what you're agreeing to and why and when, and that it's happening. So I'm all for it. It might be annoying at first because it's definitely a shift from what we're used to on Android, but I think it's going to protect a lot of people.
Yeah.
So let's see here. And yes, you know, my mom opted for an iPad. I couldn't talk her into something else. That's okay. You know, her friends probably all have iPads. So there you go.
You couldn't give her the Zoom, the X Zoom?
The X Zoom. Exactly. No, I just don't see that working very well for her. So let's see here. In other news, well, other L news anyways, we've, you know, ever since we got the developer preview at Google I.O. and people have installed the image on, you know, at least a few devices. If you have a current Nexus device, you have the ability to install it. And I think it's even been ported over to other devices. People have been asking, is this preview going to be updated or is this preview all we get until the official release? Well, it turns out that Google's Rich Hindman said on Google Plus that it's not likely to happen. He said, quote, there will be some extras coming, like a 64-bit emulator, but I don't believe new device images are coming. The preview release is primarily for developers to be able to test their apps, get them ready for the L launch. It is the first time we've had a preview release, and it will mean less chance of issues with apps in the Play Store at launch and more apps ready to take advantage of the new features. So if you're looking for an update, I suppose it's possible. You know, you never know. Google likes to change things, you know, and kind of pull the rug out and suddenly do something different. It's been known to happen. But right now, it kind of seems like the developer preview that we have is buggy as it may be, is what we got. How do you guys feel about that? I mean, it serves its purpose, right? I mean, its purpose is to allow developers to develop against it. Do you think an updated preview version would also be beneficial to developers to continue to troubleshoot their apps? What do you think, Jason?
I want to say, like, within the context of actually updating apps, what we're seeing, and, you know, I want to, you know, kind of like backpedal this to the Glass conversation, what we're seeing with the updates of the Glass firmware is if you have major performance considerations, you probably want to, like, fix those and everything. Personally, I haven't messed around with the Android L stuff. I haven't installed it. Most of the gear I use is, you know, is for work, and basically my entire rig goes with me wherever I go, so I can't, you know, mess around with that stuff if it cuts me off from work.
Sure.
But I mean, it's not too surprising that they do that, because I can see how they'd have, you know, so many different builds of so many different operating systems, when kind of one of the themes that I took away from I/O was they said, you know, at some point we're going to try and unify and streamline what the Android experience should be. And, you know, like they never use the F word and they never, you know, mention fragmentation, but, you know, to try and like blend those all together. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, unless the thing is so buggy, it's completely unusable and, you know, it just won't run.
I don't find that to be the case. I mean, up until I got the OnePlus One yesterday, so I've started using this, but up until then, like, I've stuck with the developer preview. I've been actually pretty darn happy with how stable it is. Now, mind you, before the Nexus 5, any of my devices before that, the Galaxy Nexus, the Motorola Droid, my reality, my life was rooting it and ROMing it. And for a long time there, I was addicted to ROMing it. So I was very used to ROM, you know, unstable ROMs, but just putting up with it because it's cool. You know, it's this cool new shiny thing. So maybe like that part of me is just kind of warped a little bit, and I'm okay with the fact that it might restart here and there. But there were no system, there were no like critical showstoppers as far as I was concerned.
I wanted to say, well, I'm sorry, just to interject. So what doesn't work? I mean, because in my experience, you take, you know, like a custom ROMs, or you do like Cyanogen and the wonderful community that those guys have, but you put a custom ROM on a handheld device and it's always Bluetooth doesn't work, you know, and perfectly out of the box. Wi-Fi can be wiggy.
Yeah,
the battery life, like will, you know, will discharge a little bit too much, you know, uncomfortable. So what doesn't exactly work?
I mean, for me, with the developer preview, I really rarely ever saw something that didn't work. Random sampling of apps, like one of my Reddit app of choice is Bacon Reader, and that doesn't work on L. And so, you know, whatever. There's a million different Reddit apps, so I just installed a different one and just dealt with it. Every once in a while, it would just kind of, I wouldn't get any service and a reboot would start it. You know, little things like that. I think I heard some people complain about some issue with MMS, but because I'm on Google Voice, I don't really deal with that because there just is no MMS for me. I'm screwed there. So, but, you know, I think it really depends. I mean, if that were, you know, if I was dependent on MMS and I was running Android L, that might be a game changer, you know, or a deal breaker for me. So I think it just depends on the person. But it was nothing like running it and it rebooted my device 10 times every day, which I've definitely ran ROMs on older devices that did that kind of thing, you know, and that's too far. But so there you go. So, you know, I suppose the challenge here for people who aren't developers but who like living in the, you know, the cutting edge as far as Android OS versions is concerned, is that this is a developer preview and the purpose for it is not so that you know, get the latest and greatest version. It's different than what Google's done in the past. The purpose is very different. It's for developers, and you get to play around with it too, but you're not going to get a stable version until it's official. So there you go. And Gina, I'm curious about this one. This was news that broke last week, and I'm curious to hear what you think about this.
Yeah, this is kind of rewinding a little bit to our parental controls discussion earlier. So around the beginning of the year, the European Commission called both Apple and Google out for making it far too easy for children to make unintended or intended but unwanted in the eyes of parents anyway, purchases using app stores and in-app purchases mechanisms. So your kid grabs your phone and spends $600 on you know, themes and avatars and whatever.
Coins.
On your phone.
Yes.
So the European Union checked back in on progress with Google and Apple, and they're pretty happy with what Google has explicitly promised, which is that starting in September, Google will stop advertising games with in-app purchases as free in the Play Store. So those games will no longer be considered free. Also, payment verification will be required for every in-app purchase. This was unlike Apple, who was unwilling to commit to any specific concessions. European Commission wasn't so happy with them. And there's no word whether or not these changes will extend to outside the EU. I kind of hope that they will because, I don't know, I think that there's a fair argument to say that if there's an app that requires in-app purchase, particularly an app that has so little functionality that, you know, really to do anything, you know, you need to buy something, to advertise it as free, it does seem a little bit misleading, especially if it's a game targeted toward kids. My child is not quite savvy enough with my phone to have. I haven't run into this problem yet with her, but I know you have, Jason.
Well, I mean, so. I haven't really. My child hasn't, my 4-year-old daughter has not ran up charges necessarily, but she has figured out how to install apps. And I have set, and I think she's forgotten because she hasn't installed an app in like a really long time. But so yay, win. But I have installed the check for a password every time you want to make a purchase. So I have that set. So I'm kind of not as worried about it. Like, you install an app, okay, great, not a big deal. But you're going to get a roadblock if you try and do an in-app purchase or you try and install an app that requires purchase. So I feel better about that. Listing it on the Play Store as not free, but that it's different because it has in-app purchases, I think that's a great idea. And actually right now, Play Store does show that underneath the free button, if I remember correctly, in-app purchases. So it's listed there in some way, but it's still there as free. I'm not sure if that's the change that needs to happen. I don't know. I guess how do you decide? Like some games, for example, you can't get very far in a realistic amount of time. Like, sure, you could play free for 5 years and you get as far as you could in like 3 hours if you paid something. So obviously they're saying, well, it's way too difficult for you to play it in reality, so you're just going to plunk down the money eventually anyway. So something like that, yes, absolutely. But there are a lot of games that charge you for stuff, but you're perfectly capable to play that game without it and not really hit a roadblock. It just makes it a little bit easier. So where's the line there? You know what I mean? I'm not...
Yeah, it's very subjective.
I know. Alan, Jason, are you parents? Does this concern you?
I am a parent. Yeah. This does concern me. But honestly, I think this is a very anemic answer. One of the things I've always wanted to do, you know, at one point I had to create a new account for myself officially because my child's under 13. So officially it's my other account. Mm-hmm. And we're all playing into that fiction, including Google. But if I wanted to even enable the ability to do in-app purchases, and that's not an unreasonable thing for some cases, now I'm exposing an account to being able to use charges. And I didn't like that idea at all. I've been disappointed that there's no way to do any allowance type system. So I can't transfer over $2 worth of Play Store credits, for example. That's a feature that just doesn't exist.
Yeah,
the closest
be nice.
I can get is to buy a Play card and issue that to him, and he'll go through that in 5 minutes.
Right.
You know, so I think this is a good start. I don't think they're really thinking about the best solution to the problem. And I think there are some really good solutions to the problem, which would be good for Google and good for parents and good for kids. And they just haven't adapted to any of them yet.
Sure.
I have never seen the whole micropayments thing as... I'll capitulate where saying, you know, some people can see it as bait and switch. I see it as upselling, which I've never necessarily thought to be a negative thing. I am not a parent right now, but I'm very, very frugal when it comes to like my own spending. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if I can do 100% free, I'll go for that. What I'm interested in is seeing where... applications or titles, like specifically games, since you mentioned that, Jason, like what happens if I develop a purely free game and at some point I actually implement micropayments, like I build something in the vein of Farmville, and then one of these days I want to say, hey, you know, you can get the elusive platinum turnip that only 5 people in the world have, because I've now implemented that in my application 2 years down the road, does that mean I have to reclassify my app, or will the Play Store do that for me, and how will that affect future sales, because now I'm lumped in with a completely different crowd, and does that change, you know, consumer perception about what I'm trying to do?
Sure. And
that's my interest.
Yeah, the answer to that probably lies in how Google approaches how it lists these things entirely.
There going to be like a micropayments category that now if you swipe through the Play Store, you get free, paid, you know, whatever and everything. Is there going to be a separate column?
Just kind of sounds like that's what it might end up being, right? Is truly free, paid, and then micropayments or in-app purchases, IAP. Who knows? But yeah, it's kind of what it sounds like it might end up being. So
I've never really
right
seen
right now
those
kind you don't. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Gina. I'm sorry. I was going to say, but I've never seen those as, you know, like micropayments whenever they're implemented at the at the get-go or somewhere down the road. I've never seen those as, you know, nefarious. It's just, you know, it's a clever thing. And, you know, no company that I've seen has ever, you know, hidden that. Like, you know, if you go to the description in the Play Store, you'll see at some point they said, well, you know, play a really cool game and, you know, have a lot of fun, interact with your friends. Plus, you can unlock, you know, bonus episodes or exclusive features, you know, if you do something like that. So they're never hiding it.
Yeah, but if you're talking about products that are being sold to kids, and largely that's what we are talking about here, the fact that you've got free in the title means that a parent can say, okay, only try installing the ones that say free. And now they've got this cue that if it's not free, maybe they shouldn't be installing it. That will work in at least some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, but some.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, for now, like right now when you upload your app, if it's free or paid, like Google does all the categorization, you know, for you. You don't label it yourself as a developer. And I do agree that as a developer, the word free is a very, very powerful marketing tool, right? And so there's, you know, people go to the top free apps and the top paid apps, but they're more likely going to the top free apps, right? If they're just kind of idly sitting in the doctor's office looking at whatever, install an app. So you would lose placement on a list that gets a lot of users. As a developer, I'm thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many games, like you said, Jason, that you start off and you can do, you can play for 5 years to get so far, but if you pay, you know, and Google's not going to determine that, well, this app is basically useless unless you pay, right? Like, they're not going to decide that. It's either if in-app purchase exists or not. And right now, the Play Store lists if in-app purchase exists underneath the install button, but it sounds like this would just list it differently. In terms of the real solution, I think this might be part of the solution, but, you know, iOS 8 is apparently introducing a feature called, like, Ask to Buy, where a child can, you know, can ping their parent and say, you know, can do I have permission to buy this? And the parent says yes or no. That seems like a really good, a better kind of solution. But
I agree.
It seems and like it's getting there.
I agree. And if that ties into, as we discussed earlier, that ties into the enterprise management system, I think that would be a great solution.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 It all comes full circle. excellent. Well, I suppose we'll find out. That's September. We're going to hear more about what Google's official solution is there. So not too long anyways. Let's take a few minutes and talk to you guys about the book that you wrote. Of course, it's obviously a big accomplishment. You guys wrote for O'Reilly the book Designing and Developing for Google Glass. And I have to imagine that was a big pat on the back, because that can't be easy to write a book of this breadth. I mean, there's just it's super dense, super thick, and it's really good for developers who are considering developing for some of Google's newest initiatives, in this case, of course, Glass. I suppose a good question to kind of start things off is just the challenge that it is for developers to develop for something that's so new. And I suppose Google Glass has been around for a couple of years now and in the public's hands for a little more than a year. So there's a little bit of a paradigm there that people can kind of grasp. But we'll start with you, Alan. Being the Google developer expert for Glass, what is the biggest challenge, or what are some of the challenges that developers have when developing for this platform, would you say?
Oddly enough, and this is something I think we really try to get across in the book a lot, the developing part of developing for Glass is pretty easy. We really try to say, look, you're already a developer. You already know how to program. You already know how to do this stuff either on the web or on Android. Play to your strengths, because Glass really caters to things that you're already used to doing, already used to certain ways that you're doing things. The big change with Glass and the big difficulty in developing for Glass is just kind of thinking about the form factor. And I don't just mean that it's sitting on your head, but it takes an entire different way of thinking about the design, about how to approach applications, that changes. In fact, the subtitle on the book that you may have seen is thinking differently for a new platform. And we really do think that Glass requires a whole new way of thinking about your applications. And one of the other phrases we like using is that Glass is all about actions, not about apps. So if you're thinking of it in terms of, oh, hey, I've got this application, works fine on Android, I'll just port it over here to mm-hmm. Glass, problem solved, you're thinking about it wrong. And you really need to start your thinking over again. And that's part of what we try to do in the book, is help you think about how to start over.
Do you think a lot of developers have kind of approached it that, in that way? Another version of Android, and I have to imagine that's kind of an impulse because you're so used to developing for Android with a certain kind of approach. And then along comes this completely new, smaller screen size, different use case. You're not going to put a launcher up there or anything like that. So you just have to think about it very differently.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of Android developers really start off with the attitude of, oh, it's just another Android platform. In fact, I've seen a lot of other non-Android developers telling me, oh, I need to learn Android to develop for Glass. And when I explain to them, no, you don't. If you're already a web developer, you can use tools that you're used to using, like Python and PHP and REST-based stuff and JSON and all of that stuff that you've hopefully been using for the past few years. Just use it on Glass. Mm-hmm. It works. And we're seeing the same problem coming up again with Wear, that all of these Android developers say, oh, hey, it's Android. It's on a watch. I can do everything I did for my phone for my watch now. Great.
Yeah.
And they don't see how it's different and why it should be different and how people are treating it differently. And I think until they do, they're not going to really get the most out of it. They think they are, but they end up not doing so. And they create very, very unpleasant applications in some cases.
And I think what we try and do in the book, and like Alan and I spent many, many, long nights, like overseas again, because I'm on Guam, I'm on the other side of the world. So I come home from work and I give him a call on Hangouts or Skype. And I'm like, hey, OK, let's talk about some ideas, or, he had an epiphany that he wants to share with me. And we would talk about the fact that, when you build for Glass, there are development patterns that you want to adopt and everything. But there are design principles that are a lot more generic and a lot more, not necessarily flexible, but they can let you do a lot of creative things, but you still have to kind of limit yourself to, again, like Alan said, the form factor and the limitations of, working within a Prism display that is incredibly private to the user, using the person's actual real world environment as the backdrop for your application, which is a completely different paradigm than what we've worked for in any development environment, where you're basically just saying, you're thinking about this in terms of UI widgets and how you lay this out, because the person is going to be sitting down at a computer terminal, essentially tethered to their machine. And now you say, what is the person looking at? Are they staring directly into the sun? Are they looking at a brick wall? Are they doing stuff like that? And you have to factor these into the user interface of your application. So a lot of these things aren't necessarily brain surgery, but people don't really take them into consideration when they first start laying out their app. An anecdote I'd like to share is something interesting, because Alan gave a really wonderful talk on developing for Glass when he was in New York City. And, jump in any time, Alan, but he actually took a straw poll of the crowd to whom he was addressing. And he said, okay, well, how many people have built for Glass? 98% of the hands went up. And he goes, okay, how many people have actually gone through Google's documentation as far as the design principles? And what was it, like less than 10%? And people concentrate... Yeah, people concentrated so much on function and so much less on form. And I don't, maybe that's indicative of our community as Google developers, because we put so much emphasis on, what can it do and the wonderful technology we can bake into it, but not necessarily the presentation of data and the way you structure your app.
Well, and it's like, where did developers for Android learn this? They learned it from their parents. They learned it from Google, because for the longest time, that was kind of Google's approach with Android, right? Is, it doesn't look that pretty, but it does all these crazy cool things. And, at least it can do those things. So I think Android kind of was born out of that approach. And now Google's going to lengths to kind of change that perception. But that's an interesting point. It's kind of almost too far on the other side to where developers are like, well, I don't know that I need to pay attention to that kind of stuff, because I've never had to before. It was just, what cool things can it do? If you guys had to kind of look forward into the future, what do you see is kind of laying ahead for Google Glass? Is, competitors, or do we see the whole idea of a face computer evolving to something different? Is this a fad, or is it a revolutionary? What would you guys think?
Well, I'll admit I'm probably somewhat biased on this.
Yes, understood.
But I don't see it as a fad.
Yeah.
I see this kind of as the the first in a long line of technologies that say, hey, wearables are more than just things that sit on your wrist. It's really kind of opening people to saying, hey, where else can you put a wearable that makes sense? What else can you do with it? How can the form factor kind of dictate different things that you can do with it? How does wearing it on your head differ from wearing it on your wrist, differ from wearing it on your belt buckle, differ from wearing it in your shoes, differ from wearing it in a hat? What are the different things that each one of those can do? I think glass is the first one to kind of question that. Because previously everyone was saying, look, if it's a wearable, it'll be on your wrist. Mm-hmm. If it's in front of your eyes, then it's going to be virtual reality. And glass kind of stepped back and said, no, there are problems with virtual reality. And we're at least 20 years out from solving those problems. But there are some things we can learn from the VR and the AR communities now and make our computing experience now better. And let's take those and adapt them. I think someday we're going to see some glass evolve into a better form of augmented reality. But I think it's going to be a long time, because the key problem of how do you do something that just isn't distracting, that's a really tough problem to solve. And glass solved the problem by saying, we're going to make it so that you see the world around you most of the time and you're not distracted. That's kind of the cornerstone for glass and the cornerstone for wear.
Concerted effort that we also tried to do when we were putting the book material together was try and explain a concept that, you know, Google mentioned very, very briefly in the early talks, like in last year's I/O, and they mentioned micro interactions, which was a term that got kind of thrown around a couple times, but, you know, it was kind of like one of those blink if you miss it, blink and you might miss it terms.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of self-explanatory, actually. I mean, that is the nature of a micro interaction, if you think about it.
Yeah, and so what we tried to do is actually like really explain what that is and what that means within the context of these type of applications. And, you know, like, because the device obviously makes information very omnipresent and hopefully low intrusion, and it can still be high impact. That's a really interesting trifecta to try and pull off if you come from traditional app development environments, whether you're building something for the desktop or you're building a mobile native application or you're building for the web, to try and condense a bunch of user interactions down to something that would be like a sub 5 second session. For a lot of people, that's really, really challenging. And so, like, what known web brands are trying to do, like, you know, like, you know, we haven't seen glassware from that yet, but we mentioned that in the book, you know, how are the Hulus and the Netflixes and the Pandoras and the, you know, companies of that ilk, how are they going to implement the micro interaction model and do something for them? Obviously, you don't want to use glass as a Netflix viewing client, because you'll probably get only, you know, 5 minutes of battery life, but maybe you can manage your queue. Maybe you can do something like that, just getting alerts as, you know, maybe you can integrate it with your DVR and say, hey, this program that you that you're digitally recording is starting now, and something like that. So it's a completely different mindset to have about how you can build brand new concepts for the wearable paradigm. And this of course includes wear, or how you can take known web brands and extend them to yet another client and, you know, still be able to, you know, do business and, you know, satisfy your customers and everything, but without crudely porting over, you know, old code, which is going to be like an insane experience to try to run on these things.
Sure. Yeah, I'm very curious to see what happens in the next year or two, particularly because, you know, right now we see Google really getting behind Android Wear. Android Wear is kind of the new hotness in the world of Android, and you know, we're going to hear a lot more about this, but glass didn't necessarily come from the same team that Wear came from, correct? And it's kind of like they simultaneously bubbled up on their own, but they kind of have to merge at some point, don't you think?
We saw that merger starting to take place right from the first moment we learned about Wear, actually. But no, it seems like they were created I won't say independently, at least separately. But if you look at things like the Wear design documentation, some of it is cut and paste verbatim from the glass design documentation. The primary spokesperson talking about Wear design is Timothy Jordan, who is on the glass team at I/O. Yeah. When they were talking about design of wearables, you had two people from the glass team and two people from the Wear team
that's true.
Sitting on stage together, and two of them had been colleagues in the past. So there's clearly cross-pollination between the two groups. There's clearly lessons that both of them learn from the other one. And I think that's a good thing. I think the other big news that came out of I.O. when it came towards Glass and Glass's future is that it will be able to receive wear notifications. So that feature is rolling out within the next few months, that Glass will, it won't be a full-featured wear device, but it will have some of the same aspects that wear devices do. And in some ways, it actually ends up being a glorified wear device. So it can do wear notifications. It can do its own standalone apps. It can get other web notifications. It can be tethered. It can be standalone. It's got all of these different aspects to it. But part of those aspects are very clearly wear oriented.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we kind of move on, obviously, you guys wrote an awesome book here. And I know that it can be found online right now, but that there's a hardcover version coming at some point. Which one of you kind of wants to tell folks where they can find the book and how they can find it? Jason, you want to do that?
Sure. Happy to. Would like to, they can basically like reach out to Alan or I. We would be happy to, and we do this kind of stuff all the time anyway, which is, you know, if you've got questions about the approach we take, you know, we want to make sure that you make a smart buying decision. You know, we love writing about this stuff, and part of the reason why we put the book together is because we were independently, we've been friends for years, but, you know, we were constantly going on Google Plus and writing these, you know, like lengthy blog posts about what the wearable thing, you know, criticizing it, thinking about what it could become. And so one day we just said, you know, we could probably turn this into a commercial venture, or we could, you know, like, I've got a few friends in the publishing industry. You want to give it a go? And he was like, yeah, sure. So we put that together. So we want to make sure that you get the most out of this book. Reach out to either of us on Google Plus or our sites. You can also go to O'Reilly.com. And if you look, search for the name, Designing and Developing for Google Glass, you'll find it there. And you can actually get the early release version, which is 20% off what the MSRP is going to be. And what you also get with that is, so you get the e-version right now, so you can, you know, get it in a bunch of different formats. You get it .mobi as a PDF. You can get it for Kindle, basically any kind of e-reader it supports. And then you also get free unlimited updates as we continue to publish more stuff, like what we're doing right now is we're updating a lot of the post-IO material. There you go. Thank you. We're updating the wear integration and exactly the technicalities of what that involves. And you get all that stuff for free as we continue to add the publishing. Plus, you get the final version of the book when it comes out. And we're looking right now, November or December, for the physical version.
Right on, you guys.
And this awesome. Book is as much about, you know, the glass community and the computing community in general as it is for us. You know, we're doing the majority of the work, but we've had so much positive encouragement, and we've had so much feedback. So, I mean, it's a labor of love. And, you know, and we've also told people, if you find anything that you would like to see in the book, please, you know, just drop us a line, because, you know, and if we wind up using it, we'll more than happy to give you credit, because that's not only good literary practice, that's also good open source, which we're both very strong advocates of.
Sure. Right on. That book, again, is Designing and Developing for Google Glass. Check it out. Awesome having this perspective on the show. We talk about glass all the time, and now, of course, wearables. And it's a cool kind of intersection that's happening right now. This thing that we've known for the last couple of years is kind of converging with this new wearables trend that seems to be quite a big deal right now. So it's cool to see where it lands. And this book looks like a fantastic way to kind of learn a little bit more about the nitty gritty on all that too. So
may I just ask real quick? I was always been interested in Gina's input on, you know, how do you feel about the frameworks for building for Glass? And have you even messed around with trying to extend todo.txt, you know, your Android app as a wearable application?
I haven't played with the Glass SDKs yet, mostly because I'll be totally honest, like, I think Glass is really cool, but it's just not part of my everyday life. And I'm a kind of scratch your own itch kind of developer. So I certainly thought through a lot of todo.txt, like, you know, what does todo.txt look like? And actually, I was curious to know how much of your audience are building brand new apps from scratch, or thinking in terms of the app that they already have and how that app would work, you know, on these platforms. I think that's why a lot of developers' views are kind of limited, right? Because they've got this kind of inertia thinking about it, you know, an existing app, extending an existing app versus starting with a new app. I thought about it a lot more with the watch, honestly, because I wear the watch and I really love it. I couldn't sort of get over the whole going out into the world with this, you know, visor on part of glass. So I didn't dive into the development of it. It's that chicken and the egg thing where it's like, well, when, you know, if the users that are there, then I'll, you know, work on the app versus the users will come if the developers will come. I mean, I think there's still a lot of, I mean, I think glass still has a lot of hurdles to get over just from a sort of cultural acceptance standpoint. That was a long-winded answer.
No, I also think Google took that very approach, like you said, of going to, you know, not just kind of like startup-y ideas, but also taking known brands. Because what we saw at I.O. is there was a really good slide during, you know, the Wear presentation when they said, you know, we reached out to a bunch of existing companies that have very successful Android apps, and we tried to see if they'd be willing to extend their concepts to the wearable market. And, you know, you had companies like Ift and Tinder and Text Plus and, you know, like an ESPN, and even, you know, these were former startups, and these were, you know, really good brands that are really trying to do some stuff. That wasn't so much the case in the first Glass days. I mean, you had, you know, household names like Evernote and Twitter and Facebook got on board, but, you know, really haven't seen a lot of traction from that crowd afterwards. We're seeing some interesting grassroots ideas come out of Glass, but I think with Wear, they're actually trying to take, you know, names that are known and trying to say like, okay, well, you know, you guys have like a fair amount of momentum already and everything. Like, let's try and see if we can make that continue.
Right.
Well, awesome stuff. Check it out. Great conversation there. We do have so much more to talk about, so let's move on. But before we get to the next segment, let's thank our first sponsor of today's episode. That would be Lantronics, makers of the X-Print server. Whether you're at home or at the office, printing from your Android device, I've experienced it. It's not always that easy. Printing from your Chromebook, even the Kindle Fire, can be a challenge. And if your printer isn't already Cloud Print enabled, you are out of luck. I know my printer at home is not Cloud Print enabled, and I have been out of luck. But thankfully, the XPrint server makes it possible. This is the Cloud Print Edition. It's an easy to set up, easy to use solution for Cloud Print, Google's Cloud Print enabled devices. It allows wireless and mobile printing from Chromebook computers, Android phones, tablets, Kindle Fire, and it works with the printer you already own, whether it's wired or wireless, USB or network. It's the first and only print server officially certified by Google for Cloud Print and Android printing. You can print to your existing printers. You don't need to buy a new printer in order to do this. Compatible with more than 4,000 top brand printers. It's easy to use. Automatic discovery and setup of printers. You just open it up, plug it in. You got the Ethernet port on the side here, and you print to it. And it just recognizes it through Google Cloud Print. It's super simple. One XPrint server supports multiple printers and virtually unlimited Android devices. And you've got advanced configuration through the web interface. You can actually allow your USB printers to be shared with users all over your network. So it's perfect for the home. It's also great for your office, and it works with large multifunction printers. And Cloud Print Edition, that's what I have here. This is being sold for $149.95. It supports up to 10 network printers and 8 USB printers simultaneously. And this little X lights up red in a nice, pretty fashion. You can kind of see it sparkle there, but when it's plugged in and operating, it looks pretty cool. So you can visit xprintserver.com/twit for more information and to buy. And we've got a special offer if you do so. Use the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. Don't forget to use that code. Remember, visit xprintserver.com/twit and at checkout, enter the code TWIT. We thank Lantronics for their support of All About Android. Now, this is really important stuff here. Before we move on to hardware, we've got some breaking news. Break me off a piece of that Kit Kat bar. I love it when we got breaking news. New Google Play Store update hit just a short amount of time ago. And JJ Carrot 4884 in the chat room, I hope I'm saying that right. Is that your real name? Thank you for alerting me to this. And actually, the new Play Store app apparently brings material design apps and content pages. So it's totally different. It's a different Play Store app. This is kind of what they were teasing at I.O. as far as some of their material design refreshes. So it has begun. If Google Plus was the first app to kind of get materialed, consider this the second, and it looks very different. Wow.
It does. It looks really nice. I like this. Of course, Android Police does have the APK. I try to wait for the official rollout. It's rolling out now, slowly, too slowly for my taste. But yeah, look, this looks really neat.
So remember a while back, I remember someone saying, if you go into your Play Store app and you go to settings, and then you go down to build version, you tap it. No, wrong. It says it's up to date.
Oh, well.
You are not telling me the truth. Oh, well, it was worth a try. I really wanted that to work. So there you go. Look for an update to your Google Play Store app with material design goodness in tow. Exciting stuff. All right. So let's talk about hardware. That's the next segment. Let's do it. Hardware. All right. So Gina... what are we hearing about from NVIDIA? It was kind of a leaky ship last week, and then we got some official news this morning.
It sure was. Let's talk about The Shield. Not the TV show, although that was a good TV show. The Shield tablet is now official. NVIDIA has made it official after leaking all last week. The NVIDIA Shield tablet is 8 inches, 1080p LCD screen, 32-bit Tegra K1, 2.2 gigahertz quad-core CPU, 192-core Kepler GPU, 2 gigabytes RAM, a passive stylus, 5-megapixel rear-facing and front-facing camera, which is kind of interesting. Micro SD, micro SIM for 3G and LTE service. This is the first Android device that can stream directly to the Twitch gaming video service. This is why the rear-facing camera and the front-facing camera are both 5 megapixels. It's kind of a high for front-facing camera and kind of low for a rear-facing camera. And because, of course, it's the Shield, this comes with an optional controller, game controller, full game controller, which uses Wi-Fi Direct instead of Bluetooth. To connect the device, which NVIDIA says results in half the latency of Bluetooth controllers. 4 controllers can connect to the Shield tablet at one time. Controllers have a headphone mic plug for voice commands and online chat. And the Shield tablet will be $299 when this launches in the U.S. and Canada July 29th, next week. And the premium Shield with LTE and 32 gigabyte storage, $399. And the controller is $59. So to recap, this is a tablet with a game controller and a stylus, which is for enterprise gamers who moonlight as sketch artists on the go. I don't know. I'm not a huge gamer. The NVIDIA Shield was really cool. The first one, which is now called the NVIDIA Shield Portable, that was that game controller with a little flip up screen. Mm-hmm. I looked at this Shield tablet and the specs sound amazing and it looks really, really cool. That controller looks really cool. But I was just like, I don't know who this is for. Like, I'm trying to figure out. Like, I get it. I guess if you're a really big gamer, and I guess you do kind of need something to prop up your screen there, as you can see in the video. Thank you, Brian, for showing that, because you got 2 hands in your controller and you're playing games. I mean, it looks amazing. I was sort of amazed by all the 2 accessories and the whole deal. I don't know, Jason. What do you think about the Shield? Is this the coolest thing ever? And I'm just being a naysayer or what?
I think it has potential. I think it's cool hardware. Don't get me wrong there. I think our hardware is awesome. The capabilities of streaming your games from a compatible PC to the device are cool. I think the fact that it's connecting with Wi-Fi Direct and not Bluetooth is probably great for latency, even though if you're streaming from your computer to your device, there's probably some latency there. I don't know how that affects gameplay at all. Talking about, you know, chicken and egg, right, from earlier, I think what NVIDIA is trying to do here is they're trying to make console gaming a reality with Android. And, you know, more and more we're kind of hearing about this, Android becoming more of a gaming system in some way. Android TV kind of promises to do this as well. And NVIDIA is certainly the company to do it. But again, chicken and egg, right? Like, in order for developers to really get behind it and create console quality games for it, they have to know that there are enough users there that are supporting that have bought the hardware and supporting that ecosystem. And I'm not sure where that's at. I don't know. Are either of you guys hardcore gamers? Would you consider yourself in the market for something like this?
I am so far from being a hardcore gamer. It's not fun. I am absolutely, positively not a hardcore gamer.
And tell them the last game you played, partner.
It was Civ 3, probably.
That's not a bad game. It was a while ago.
Alan and I co-hosted a hangout on air about developing games for the wearable market, and yeah. I was talking about I haven't been a gamer for years, but I was talking about my experience with like Excite Bike and stuff like that, and Alan was going back to like Zork.
Yeah, Zork.
So we go back a ways.
Now, but I think what this tablet says to me though is that there's somebody out there that's willing to step up and say, hey, Android tablets can be something different. They don't need to be the same thing as every other tablet we see on the market. And I give major props to them for at least trying this, for trying to say, hey, tablet controller, stick one on the other. Maybe that'll work. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great thing to try. Whether it succeeds or not, it's another story, of course. But, the great thing about Android is that people can try what may be wacky ideas.
It's true.
And within a year or two, it becomes the standard. So that's, I give them major props for trying.
I absolutely agree with what Jason was saying about Google putting so much into developing Android as a gaming platform. Because, if you look at it, a third of consumer entertainment spending in America and Guam is on video games. This is a market. It's not like music, which continues to get less and less and less, and movies, where by virtue of streaming services, the price is so low right now, and people are DVRing stuff, and then they're getting they're paying for individual tracks as opposed to an entire album, so the revenues get lower and lower. If a game is good, people are going to spend money willingly and happily for it. So it's a very lucrative market. What I'm interested in seeing is how Jason and Gina, you were talking about like the fact that the device can stream to a PC or to another platform, I guess, within the same Wi-Fi network. I'm really interested, and I've always been, in seeing, like, remember the company OnLive, where you can, what they tried to do, where you can actually stream games from the cloud and have extremely low latency and do that. And I'm interested in seeing how Google tries to develop that model.
Well, it sounds like they're saying that this is able to broadcast directly to Twitch. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
So
yes.
It's clear that they're wanting to tap into that same sort of thing as well.
Sure, sure. Now, our technical director, Brian, who likes to live in the shadows.
Yes.
You're a gamer. What do you think?
I think it's pretty cool. I mean, that's some pretty sweet hardware for that kind of price. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely the whole streaming from one device to another is definitely catching on, whereas Steam from Valve, which has a pretty huge presence in gaming, you can use your home PC to stream to different devices in the house. And so, if somehow NVIDIA is able to tap into sending, this is, off really pie in the sky, but send to like Chromecast or something like that, or to any other device in your house, like that's pretty cool. And I just moved out of my apartment recently, and I'm looking for something that's more portable to game with, and this is like pretty much right down my alley, because I have a laptop, I have a gaming PC, but I'd like to kind of have some intermediary thing, which would be like a tablet, and use this for that.
Awesome.
That makes sense.
And $300, right?
Yeah.
Not a bad price at all. So there you go. And hey, you could play Portal. Isn't Portal like one of the NVIDIA Shield?
That was one of the big names. That, and I think it was like Half-Life 2.
Yeah,
and
Half-Life 2.
The only thing we could think about was, Gabe, when's Half-Life 3 coming out?
That's right.
How many people have died waiting for Half-Life 3?
No kidding. Oh, let's... Moment of silence. Okay. All right. So let's shift gears a little bit. Xiaomi unveiled its newest flagship phone, primarily for the Chinese market. A few other international spots are expanding slightly in their neck of the woods. The Mi 4, and CEO Li Jun channeled his very best Steve Jobs at the unveiling, complete with jeans and a black shirt, and even a one more thing. One more thing up on the wall. You did it. You went there. Showed off the device that's sure to be in high demand. All of their flagships at Xiaomi are just really high demand. They do kind of a small-ish lump release of, you know, a batch of devices, and they sell out within like 20 minutes or a few hours. So it's kind of crazy over there with their devices. They showed off the device, a 3G version releases on July 29th. Its first 4G version releases in August. And it's kind of bears some similar internals to device that I'll be talking about here in a few minutes, the OnePlus One. It's a 5-inch, not 5.5, but it's a 5-inch 1080p screen, 2.5 gigahertz Qualcomm Snapdragon 801 quad-core processor, 3 gigs of RAM, so it's stacked there, 16 gigs of memory, 3080 milliamp hour battery, and a 13-megapixel rear-facing camera, 8-megapixel front-facing camera, and touting a day and a half of battery performance and super speedy charging. So interesting. I think, you know, more and more, you know, Hugo Barra, once, you know, formerly of Google, is now with Xiaomi. And so as a result, I feel like in the States, we end up hearing about it even more and more because he's attached, and that's probably part of the reason why they hired him and brought him in-house. But, you know, eventually we're going to see more and more of their devices, possibly stateside. I don't know when they're going to release directly into the States, but I'm very curious about their hardware. They also released or unveiled a Mi Band, which is a $13 fitness band that can be used to unlock Mi phones in place of a passcode. It's waterproof, 30-day battery life, sleep cycle alarm, and measures activity levels and sleep patterns. So, Xiaomi, is this the next frontier in Android premium Android devices? What do you guys think?
Oh, man, I hope so.
Yeah.
Because I'm tired of hearing about Samsung. I'm so tired. I'm really looking forward to the stuff from them. And yeah. Thank you, by the way. I think it's the first time I've actually heard their name pronounced. But I'm looking forward to seeing their stuff just, again, because I'm curious to see on someone else's take on what an Android phone looks like. Because I'm so tired of seeing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough.
$13 Fitbit.
I know, right? Yeah,
and that thing stays on and measures your sleep. You don't have to do that thing with the Fitbit where you try. I'm interested in that.
Yeah.
Very nice. Interesting.
Very intriguing. I don't know if it works for any devices outside of the Xiaomi universe, but anyways, $13. You can't turn your nose up at that. So
yeah.
There we go. And then coming back around to Android Wear for just a few quick bits there.
Yeah, we just have a couple of quick ones for Android Wear. Developers can expect a new API soon where Google will officially support custom watch faces. Yay! Of course, the fact that there isn't an API currently hasn't stopped some developers from creating them on their own already because, let's be honest, the Watch and the Gear Live watch faces that they offer, they're not so great. Not so great. And of course, Android's all about customization.
Yeah.
So this new API likely won't be complete until the Android Wear OS migrates to Android L. So it might be a while, but Google's saying, hey, developers, don't hack it up. Just wait for the API. We'll hook you up with the ability to offer custom watch faces. So that's good news. Android Wear source code is now uploaded to the Android OSP, the open source project, for both the Samsung Gear Live and the LG G Watch. That just means that, you know, Google's making progress. They're moving it into the open source tree and they're moving it along. We can expect a full platform push once version L becomes official. And finally, if you were holding out for an HTC Android Wear watch, this little Easter egg might make you happy. From a video the company released back on July 9th, a watch sitting on the desk of a man in the video, I love the internet, matches some leaked images of HTC's supposed wearables. So let's see. Can we get this up here? This dude
It flashes by. Honestly, the screenshot's probably the best way to do it because...
This is
off in the distance. You can hardly see it down to the right. See down to the right there? It's that blurry thing, that blurry square.
Oh, my goodness.
There we go, yeah. So there you go. Proof positive, right?
That's a bizarre docking station, if so.
Yeah, it is kind of.
It is.
It makes it usable when you're not wearing it.
There are two docking stations there.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that's to imply that when you sit down at your desk, you dock your watch? Like, I would think you'd wear it during the day.
We're back to the Palm Pilot all over again.
I know.
It is square. It is not 360.
Yeah.
So. May I just add, since Gino brought up the thing about the watch faces, I seem to be the only person in the universe who actually likes, you know, and Gino was talking about this a couple of weeks ago, the 1970s style, you know, like the watch face where the text actually comes out. Because for my money, the greatest ever designed product logo, you know, where material design be damned and everything, was "Gee, your hair smells terrific." And I'm severely dating myself there.
That is the face that I use. Like I use the mini neon, which is like the 70s style, you know, with it coming out. I actually think that's the least bad one.
That's my favorite.
I feel like there are some where I'm just like, why did they even include this here? I don't know. No. Of course, style is in the eye of the beholder. Because they could. They could, of course. I'm excited for anybody to be able to design watch faces. There are some really great designers out there that definitely will. So I look forward to that.
I've seen some of the third-party designed ones right now that Google's kind of trying to get people to not do that because the official API isn't done yet. And some of them not so good. There you go. Gee, your hair smells terrific.
Is that not the most beautifully designed thing you've ever seen before? You've got the color.
The bubbly gritty letters.
Yeah. And, you know.
I had to write a book with this guy.
Oh, used to wear our hair. And, of course, you know, at 19 years old. So, you know.
I'm surprised that your book isn't in this font because, I mean, that would send it over the edge. It'd sell at least 100 copies if the book was in this font. 100 more copies anyways. So there you go. And I forgot about that product, by the way. I do remember it. All right. So OnePlus One. I have right here. This is thanks to fan of the Twit Network, Casey Mills. Thank you so much, Casey.
Lucky.
So apparently Casey was given the opportunity to buy one really early on. And he did. He like just instinctively just like, oh, okay, I'll buy it. And then he got it, and it sat in its packaging because he wasn't sure whether he wanted to keep it or whether he wanted a Moto 360. So he contacted Leo and I and said, "Hey, I've got this. It's packaged. You guys, you know, are talking about how you don't have one in house and you want to review it. I'll sell it to you, and then I can get a Moto 360." So hey, we all win. So we bought this from him. And I'm playing around with it. I literally got it yesterday, put my SIM card in it this morning, and I played around with it. Have any of you guys, Gina, Jason, Alan, have any of you guys played around with the OnePlus One yet or seen it?
No, and I'm insanely
not
jealous.
In
a friend of mine just got an invite, and I've been begging him to invite me when he gets the opportunity.
It is a slick device. I have to say, I really, really like it so far. And mind you, I've had it for a short period of time, but the design, like, you know, this is a plastic backing, but it just feels super solid. Like the texture on this backing, it's really hard to explain. It's got kind of a sandpaper style quality to it that I don't know. I really like the feel of it. It definitely gives it a little bit of a kind of a slide prevention when you're holding the device, because it's a 5.5 inch screen, so it's no slouch spec wise. This is the 64 gig version. They sell a 16 gig and a 64 gig. So $300 is the 16 gig, and then $350 it jumps all the way up to 64 gig. So a ton of storage on here. It doesn't have that removable SD card slot, so you know, you probably would want that. But it has an Snapdragon 801 processor, a 2.5 gigahertz quad core. That's the same as the S5, and I believe same as the Xiaomi Mi 4 that we were just talking about. 3 gigs of RAM on board, non-removable 3100 milliamp hour battery. Super slick, 13 megapixel rear-facing camera. But I'm going to give it a full review on next week's Before You Buy. Just kind of doing a preview right now, and gotta say I'm really happy to have this because these are insanely hard to get. Like the whole invite system, I don't know how I feel about the invite system because it's like it's gamifying scarcity.
Google, they're masters at the invite system, so the fact that they stole it from Google, I think, says something.
I suppose so.
Let me ask you, what do you think about how much have you used the Play Store with it, and how much have you used Where with it, and how well does it seem to integrate? Because that's always been my question and concern is, you know, does it feel like an Android phone that I'm used to, or does it feel like this third-party thing that is running Android.
You know, okay, so it's running a altered version, a specialized version of CyanogenMod, a CyanogenMod 11S or something. It was created just for this phone. So it's 4.4.2 KitKat. And I mean, for all intents and purposes, it feels stock, you know, in the same way that CyanogenMod kind of does, right? Like CyanogenMod, they pride themselves in giving you more or less a stock version of Android, but with a bunch of like extra under-the-hood add-ons and bells and whistles. Not to the point to where it feels bloated, because it definitely does not feel bloated. It's screaming fast, and there really is no bloatware on there. There's a few of CyanogenMod's kind of tailored apps for things like camera. In fact, I actually really like the camera app. Been really enjoying playing around with that. So they give you a little bit of their own take on some of these stock apps, but not in a bad way. Like, you know, like sometimes I'll play around with other manufacturers' kind of built-in apps, and I miss the stock version of them because I'm so used to them. And I mean, I did just get this, so that could change as well. But I actually have not been disappointed. It feels stock enough for me to feel pretty comfortable. If that answers your question, I like it. So, and I haven't used it with Wear yet because I just set it up this morning. I actually forgot my watch. And this is how I know I like Wear. I forgot it and I got to work. And I was like, man, do I go home for it? Do I drive home and get my watch?
I did the same exact thing. I was so bummed that I forgot it. I was like, Dad, it's not going to get my steps today. And
Weird. It's weird. Wear has totally grown on me. It's grown on my
wrist. And I understand that only because I'm that way about glass.
Yeah.
But not about Wear.
Okay.
I have actually told my boss, and I was like, sorry, I was 20 minutes late to work. You know, I left my Fitbit at home. You know, like I have to get my steps. I have to go back.
Yep. Fair enough. So anyways, I'm sure I'll talk about it a little bit more on next week's episode. We don't want to talk about it too much, but at the same time, it's actually pretty great. For $300, this hardware can't be beat. I think the significant downside right now is how difficult it is to get. And jumping through those hurdles and, you know, going through the kind of the game system of finding invites and all that kind of stuff, at this point, it's been so long, it's just kind of tiring, I think, for people. But, you know, at the same time, if it's either this or wait 5 months until they have this massive amount of stock so that they can release it, you know, without any chains, maybe this is better, right? Because it gets it in people's hands now. So there you go. All right. Before we move on, let's thank another sponsor of today's episode. That'll be Full Sail. It's good to have you on board, Full Sail. You've seen how the popularity of a mobile game can spread like wildfire. We see it all the time. The mobile gaming industry has become extremely profitable, and there's a demand out there for skilled developers who understand the needs of both gaming and mobile app creation. That's where Full Sail University comes in. They offer an online master's degree program in mobile gaming that can teach you the coding and business knowledge needed to become a professional in this growing career field, growing to say the least. I mean, mobile and gaming go hand in hand these days, and that's where a lot of the money's being made right now. In this accelerated master's program, you'll become immersed in the mobile gaming industry through a series of courses that directly relate to those in a game studio, including advanced programming, concept development, QA testing, and deployment. You'll create a mobile game from start to finish, and then present and market your product. And Full Sail University's online and campus degree programs are centered on real-world education, experience with industry technology, and the workflow. Through their innovative curriculum, you can actually earn your master's degree in 12 months. So if this sounds interesting to you, if you want to kind of get into development of mobile games, here's all you got to do. In addition to all of this stuff, you know, mobile gaming, Full Sail University offers a variety of master's degrees in business, tech fields. So you're not just limited to gaming. Full Sail has an excellent audio segment. I know, you know, a lot of the people that I follow in the audio industry, they started with Full Sail. That's where they got their start in a very difficult segment of the workforce. It's not very easy to thrive in the audio industry and the recording arts. And there you go. Full Sail produces people who do such things. So internet marketing, business intelligence, innovation, entrepreneurship, Full Sail has it all. To learn more about Full Sail's master's degree program in mobile gaming or any of their related programs, check out fullsail.edu/AAA. We thank Full Sail University for their support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. All right, we have to speed through some apps, so let's get into the apps segment. All right. So I always, you know, Maps is one of my favorite of Google's apps that they update regularly. I use it all the time. Maybe not as much now that I work and live in Petaluma, but when I leave Petaluma and hit the road, I definitely use it all the time. And they just released a big update for Google Maps for Android. Cyclists in particular, you're going to love these changes. There's biking directions now showing elevation as well as comparisons of different routes to pick the path with the least amount of climbing if you don't want to have to work very hard, I suppose. Also, voice commands like, what's my next turn? Show traffic. What time will I get there? How's traffic ahead? And I believe it was at Android Police. They had a little video where they were showing it off. You don't have to play it, but it seemed a little finicky. It seemed like great idea, but maybe doesn't work in practice as well as it probably should. And maybe it's preparation for things that are forthcoming in Android Auto, stuff like that. So... cool stuff there. I don't know. Maps, would you say this ranks up there as far as the app that you look forward to updates, or do you think this is a good indication of what we might see coming up with Android Auto? What do you guys think?
I look forward to updates in Maps only because I'm waiting for them to come out with a version that doesn't drain my battery faster than I can charge it.
Yeah. So what device do you have?
I've got a Galaxy Nexus still, which is why I'm curious about the OnePlus One.
Dude, I know exactly what you're talking about. The Galaxy Nexus was horrible with that. Like, I couldn't run navigation and keep it plugged in and have it charge fast enough to run the navigation.
I used to be able to do it until the latest version of Maps, and it just went downhill from there. So I've actually stopped using navigation now, pretty much because of that reason alone.
Wow.
But I'm always excited to see when they update Maps because, you know, it's kind of the benchmark application for them. You know, when they mess something up in Maps, everyone talks about it. And when they do something right, everyone talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the one they need to get right consistently.
Yep.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Maps is such a core to the experience. I'm excited to see. I was excited about Android Auto. I think it's going to be really cool. And I think it makes sense that the functionality will be across both, you know, the phone in regular Android mode and in auto mode.
Yeah, it's a little too bad, though, that like the voice, like the I realize maybe it makes the most sense to have a little button that you push so that it knows to listen for your voice actions. But when I'm driving, I don't want to touch that screen at all. I want everything voice activated. So it'd be nice to be able to do that without having to actually touch the screen to, you know, say, what's the traffic like ahead? And it is kind of funny, actually, because some of these things tell you what you're already, you know, what's already shown in really large numbers on the screen. But I guess the whole point is eyes on the road so that you're not looking at your device while you're driving. And that's super important. So
right. Right.
So, and then Amazon has a new app that they announced earlier today, right, Gina?
They sure do. The Amazon Wallet. It's in beta and in a release to the Play Store and Amazon's App Store at the same time, a simultaneous release. Pretty interesting. At least at launch, it's limited to phones right now. The app is pretty straightforward. You can scan a barcode on the back of loyalty and gift cards and save the serial PIN numbers with the app for redemption later. There's no way through Amazon's Wallet app to pay with Amazon's online payment system, though. It's a little bit head-scratching. I mean, why would Amazon want to get in the business of promoting you spending money outside of its sort of its own stores? But, you know, I think Amazon really wants to be the way that everyone pays. And I think that the fact that they release this across both app stores and release this even without, you know, buying an Amazon functionality says a lot. I think that they're serious about payments. I think that they want to be the way that you pay for everything, just like every company wants to be the way that you pay for everything. You know, we use Amazon Payments at ThinkUp, which is the product that I build. And I know that they have like they've had a lot of, you know, ambition. And they've got a lot of staff working toward getting Amazon Payments integrated. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Amazon Payments integrated into this app very quickly as a way to pay or transfer money or pay for anything anywhere. But right now it's basically storing your loyalty cards and your gift cards, and that's free and it's labeled as a beta, but it's not, you don't have to opt into the beta. It's just in the Play Store and available for installation.
It's absolutely remarkable. I think it's absolutely remarkable just how little Amazon has changed over the years. And I'm not saying that like to denigrate them. I'm saying like, you know, based on when they came out, like around 98 or 99. And as far as authentication and sign in and, you know, payment mechanisms and everything like that, they've pretty much like stuck to their guns and, you know, kind of done the same thing. I mean, they have built out like a little bit more, but pretty much the way you log into their site is pretty much the same thing. And I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine in the industry, and he was saying it's interesting in these days when you have Facebook Connect from anywhere and you have, you know, Google Plus sign in, and you can sign into sites and applications with LinkedIn and pass your credentials there. You can't really do that with Amazon. And, you know, I don't know why you'd want to, but, you know, they never really aspired to, you know, get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've got this new login and pay thing that they've been pushing. You've got a payments on Amazon.com. It's relatively new. Last fall, they're trying to get sites implemented, and they'll basically share customer data back to you. And they were actually trying to get us to switch to it, a ThinkUp. I don't know that it's going to catch on quite the same way. Although I have to tell you, Amazon is the place that I want to spend money. I feel comfortable, you know, transferring money through Amazon, which I don't feel the same sort of comfort or ease with Google Wallet for some reason, because Google represents a different thing to me, and I think it really has a lot to do with branding. But no, we're probably not going to see sign in with Amazon, you know, unless you're trying to purchase something, right? Because that's what you do there.
Right.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we, of all people, you know, as just fans of Android and Google, you know, by extension, we would be the ones to really hop into the Google Payments thing. But that's a really good point that you make. I make way more purchases through Amazon just out of the fact that I have for so long and out of habit, and out of the fact that they're obviously doing something right as far as that's concerned, because I'm not choosing to do it in another way.
And you know, the thing that everybody always says is like everybody on the internet is on Facebook practically, but then you know, the one thing that nobody says is everybody on the internet is also has an Amazon login. They log into Amazon.
And a lot of them are Prime. I guess not everybody, though. And finally, Facebook, speaking of, rolled out a new update that adds the capability to save links from within the Facebook app, also on the web actually as well, to a list of saved locations, URLs for later reading. Doesn't save a cache of the content for offline viewing the way apps like Pocket do. But, you know, it's like, I'll return to this link at some time at a later date. Man, I stockpile links nowadays. It used to be that I would bookmark things, and they'd end up in my bookmark, you know, bar, and I would just have them forever and stare at them and never revisit them, or maybe do once or twice, but I'd never delete them. Now I just have Pocket filled with thousands of links that I may never revisit because there's thousands of links in there. I guess Facebook is going to intermittently every once in a while like resurface links for you to as like a reminder, like, hey, you never checked this one out or whatever. So I suppose that's kind of nifty.
Newsfeed, like, guaranteed to show you something you were interested in at some point.
Yeah, you wanted to look at this at some point. I'm just showing you what you wanted, all right?
Just don't yell at me.
That's actually pretty clever, considering most people will bookmark or save links or whatever and never get back to them. You know, and everyone seems to want this feature, but nobody ever uses it. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, incorporating it back into your feed is a clever approach.
Yep. Agreed. Yep. All right. We have some arena to do, and we have a short period of time to do it. So let's get in the arena now.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right. So from last week's episode, that was episode 170, we had a few apps in the arena. And yeah, this one, we kind of knew where this was going to go. Once Ron showed off QCast Music, which was a way to do like Nexus Q-like sharing of a playlist with Chromecast, we knew it was all over. And with 55% of the votes, QCast wins.
Ron.
I know. I think this is either the fourth or fifth week that he's won in a row. So thankfully he's not on today.
Yeah, there's a good way. This is a great way to break his winning streak.
I guess so. he'll still claim, though, if he wins the next time that he's on, he'll still claim that of the episodes that he was on, he won consecutively. So
Wade County confirms Ron is on a 5-week W. Let's kill that streak right now. Let's kill that streak right now.
Man. All right. Well, Black.
Not fans of a dynasty, apparently.
Man, what's going to happen if we hit the end of the year and Ron's still winning? I just don't know. I'm feeling very insecure right now. Bleck was my game. That came in second place at 35%. And then Y-Plan was third place at 10%. So I suppose that makes me the loser from last week. So I'll go ahead and go first. And I will admit, this is a game that I've had kind of on deck for a while. And it's kind of a take on... Oh, and it has some excellent music. Well, I'll just say what it is. It's called Die for Metal Again. And yes, it has an excellent, if I do say so myself, like metal and death metal soundtrack. So if you don't like death metal, you're not going to like this at all. And I apologize, audio listeners. All right, so let's start the game. So you are a headbanging guy. And, you know, it's your standard game where you have all these different levels and you try and get 3 stars on each different level, right? I'm going to go early because I'm playing this sideways, so it's going to be hard for me to play. So you have these levels, and you're the guy up there. It might be kind of hard, but you're, you know, this little headbanger guy, and you move left and right. You can jump, and you don't want to hit the spikes on the side or else you'll die for metal again, as the title implies. So I'm going to jump, not hit those spikes, and then you can jump twice in the air, boom, boom, and you reach the end, and then you headbang. So that's awesome. In later levels, you actually get an axe. Right? So, I don't think I have an axe in this one. So, let's go back so I can show you the axe. Let's see here. All right. This soundtrack's stressing me out in headphones right now. I kind of can't talk over it. All right, let's see here. All right, so you got all these little spinning things. All right, so you have 2 buttons that appear when you get close to somebody. And you could... Yeah, that's right. All right. See, and now I'm dismembered. Okay, so it's a little gory, I will admit, but it's, you know, it's death metal, and that's just what you get. It's called Die for Metal Again. I could keep playing, but honestly, you get the point. And it's a lot of fun. The later levels get really complex, you know, with different platforms to jump on, moving creatures, all these different things. And honestly, it's all about the heavy metal stylings, the music, the total tongue-in-cheek approach of this game for heavy metal fans. And it is a sequel. There is a previous game called Die for Metal, and so this is kind of a continuation of that. And it cracks me up. It's a dollar for some metal fun, and you get a... There aren't many games that I've played that give you a nice death metal soundtrack. See? There you go. See? Dead. Yeah. It does. It absolutely doesn't take itself seriously. Yes, I agree. All right. Jason knows. The Jasons on this show today appreciate them. There
I'm
we
in,
go.
I'm in. Yes.
That's all right. And now I'm dismembered. All right, cool. There we go.
Actually, you know what I'm inspired to do now? Because I would like to actually write a game like in that same vein. You know, there's another disgusting.
All right. I like it.
Celebrating power ballads. The every bad boy's got a soft side thing.
It's true.
And just trying to achieve like the cheesiest, you know, figure out some way to make it through Sunset Strip. I don't know. make it from the Rainbow to the Roxy to, you know.
You made it to Palladium. Sunset Strip. Now you've got to battle it with Vince Neil something. you've got something there. It needs a little manicuring, but I'm convinced you can get there. And then make it a...
Your hair smells terrific.
Yes, exactly. That's, of course, what else would they wash their hair with? All right, cool. So on a less death metal side of things, well, I guess possibly, right, Jason? Your app could have some death metal in it. It's possible.
Oh, man, how am I supposed to follow that up now?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, my app is player.fm. It may have been featured here before, and if I do, apologies. It is actually written by a guy that I know very well. His name's Michael Mayamoff. And he lives in the UK. It is the world's first cloud-based podcast client. And Mike actually goes way back as far as being in the podcast community and wanting to actually usher audio and ultimately video content to users and everything and let people subscribe in a very, very easy fashion. So if they find a podcast they like, you can subscribe to it with a single click. And what he's done here is this actually started out as a web client, and then he also built it out as an Android app. And the Android app is just chock full of really cool features. If you're into podcasts and you enjoy, you know, time shifted content and you enjoy finding and discovering new types of entertainment, it's really, really well done. And it's absolutely free. And he's also extended this throughout the Google ecosystem. So it does have Android Wear support. It was one of like the first generation of Wear apps when Wear came out. They actually integrated that, so you get alerts on your wrist. And it also has Chromecast support. So if you have a Chromecast, you can actually take your handheld device and you can fling content straight and view it on the large, you know, on the 10-foot display, which works great if you're in a lobby situation or if you're having a house party and you just want eye candy. It's a really, really well done podcast client. It really broke new ground as far as discovering and using information and entertainment.
I love this. Average length of shows for this show, 99 minutes. Average interval, 3 days, 50 total episodes. I love that it gives you those stats because often you subscribe to a show and you don't know actually how often or how long they end up averaging. I don't know. That's information that I'm not used to seeing in podcast aggregators, but that's actually pretty handy.
Yeah, one feature that I actually like, you know, just inadvertently worked with Mike on this was because I said I was like, you know, I tend to download like a lot of the shows that I don't subscribe to, but I just, you know, like on a per episode basis, I'll download those and I'll store those in Dropbox, and then I'll use player.fm to just open it and then connect to Dropbox and then play it through that or use that as my player. And it actually works for that too. So you don't necessarily have to download things onto your device. You can actually play shows straight out of the cloud. So for those of you who are worried about disk space and, you know, like taking up stuff, it can handle that too. It's really nicely done.
Nice.
Man, it lists a lot of Android shows. There we go. Cool. So that is player.fm. And yeah, it looks like that is free in the Play Store. And check it out. I love it. That's awesome. Great design.
Cool.
Now, Alan, I regret to inform you that I totally, as I said, left my watch at home. So I can't show off your app here in the studio, but that's okay because I think the Play Store has some stuff. And if you have it on your watch, you can show it off as well. But
I have it on my watch, but I think the Play Store actually shows it off better.
Okay.
Mine is QR Wear for Android Wear because, you know, short names are better. This is one of what I think is going to be the first app of its sort, and that's just a way to get QR codes that you frequently use or that you have upcoming, such as a quick and easy way to give people your business card or, as this points out, your store card or an upcoming the QR code for an upcoming flight or something along those lines. Store it on your watch. You can enter the information in on the Android app itself. It sends it over to the watch, and you basically have a voice command that will then bring it up on the watch. Or you can share a link to QR Wear, as it's illustrating here. It's clever. It serves a need. It does it in a way that I think is distinctly well-suited for Android Wear. It's not perfect. I really am looking forward to seeing it more tied in with alarms and notifications and some context sensitive things so that, you know, I can say every time I walk into a Starbucks, show my Starbucks code. You know, at 2 o'clock, which is an hour before my flight, start putting it on my now notifications. So those sorts of things I hope are coming, but I think this is the first really good example of an application that I think is well suited for Wear. So I wanted to highlight it and start getting people thinking about, hey, here are some of those apps. Here are some of those unique things that you can do. Here's an app that has a phone component and a watch component. And both of them are essential and they work. They cater to each one's specific strengths. And that's something I always like to see in good design for wearables.
I'm realizing that the QR code that's part of the lower third really should be encased around a watch right now.
Yeah, I was thinking the same sort
Sorry
of thing,
about
but
that.
You know, let's see if I put my watch.
Oh,
can I position my watch correctly? Here we go.
Almost.
There we go.
Hey, so close. Stop. Yeah, perfect. There we go. Good enough. Excellent. Thank you for making that happen. That almost looks like the app itself. The app we were talking about, of course, is QR Wear for Android Wear. Very nice. Love it. Excellent stuff there. Cool. And Gina, what you got?
So my app pick this week is one that I've been using for a long time, particularly on the web. The Android app's been out for a while, but I was reminded of it because conference season is kind of coming up. It is called Lanyrd, and that's with one L, L-A-N-Y-R-D, Lanyrd. This is an awesome, awesome app. It was built by friends of mine. It got acquired by Eventbrite. It continues to be an awesome app. It's a social, it's an app that helps you find conferences that your friends and your contacts, your professional contacts, are going to and speaking at. So this is what you do with Lanyrd. You sign in. I found it really helpful to sign in with my Twitter account because it had all my contacts from Twitter. I think you can also sign in with LinkedIn, if I'm not mistaken. And it'll tell you, you know, what events your friends are going to. Yeah, LinkedIn or Twitter, you can sign it. So you see what events your contacts are going to, what they're speaking at, what conferences these are. And then for each conference, it's like professional conferences. So for each conference, you'll see schedules, you'll see speakers, you'll get maps and information. You can also just look for Android conferences, for example, that are happening near you. If this isn't about where your friends are speaking. I'm actually speaking at XOXO in September in Portland, which is what brought me back. I'm not doing a lot of speaking these days, but I happen to be doing that one, which brought me back in a Lanyrd. And I was just reminded what a great app it is. And the Android version has come along a long way. All conference schedules will be downloaded offline. So if the Wi-Fi is wonky at your conference, which it often is because Convention Center Wi-Fi is almost always bad, you'll have all your sessions and schedules right there in the app. And it's really cool for me to see, you know, where am, you know, what conferences are my friends attending. It helps if a lot of your friends are in tech, of course, because Lanyrd's pretty popular and a lot of people know about it already. But it's really neat to see, oh, these are all the places where my friends are going. These are the things that are near me. I can go see this person speak. If there's someone who, you know, has written an amazing developing for Google Glass book, for example, I could track them down and see their talk. So it's Lanyrd for Android. It's also on the web. Really great app if you do a lot of conferences or if you're interested in networking and doing more social networking or professional networking. And and it's free. And definitely connect your either LinkedIn or Twitter accounts, wherever you have the most contacts, because that's where I found it's most useful, is seeing where your friends are speaking or what they're where they're attending.
Awesome. That's interesting. That's Lanyrd. In the description, it had Simon Willison, I guess, as a contact. Is he one of the... Yeah. The people behind
Is
he part of the team?
Simon is one of the founders. Yeah, Simon and Natalie are the founders. And like I said, it was acquired by Eventbrite, but they built it together. I think they were like, it's some crazy story. Like they were on their honeymoon traveling and they both got sick. They drank bad water or something and were holed up in a hotel room and like wound up started to build this website for fun, you know, because of course, what else would you do when you're not feeling well? And next thing you know, like Lanyrd was born and it was independent for a while and then Eventbrite purchased it. But that's why he's in the screenshots. He's one of the founders.
Yeah, the reason I brought that up is he was one of the creators of Django, of the web framework for Python. Yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, yep.
Awesome. I'm trying to quickly log into my Twitter feed because I'm very curious to see who I know is speaking somewhere. But
I'm sure that you'll have people, Jason, because you're sort of connected in the community.
Let's see here. I want to see before we move on. I'm very curious to see if anybody.
People also upload their slides, their slide decks to the different conferences. Okay. So if there are conferences that you've missed, you can kind of get see some of the content that you've missed. It's kind of neat, like third party repository. A lot of conferences, you know, like Google I/O had its own very own app. A lot of conferences have their own little schedules or apps, but this is a nice way to kind of see them all at once. Oh, see, yeah, you've awesome. Got quite see? A few. You got folks at OSCON.
Jim Lauterbach at the Video Marketing Summit. Tom Merritt at SkepTrack 2014. Critical Thought at DragonCon, I see. That's Atlanta, August 29th. And then, this is Gina Trapani.
Yeah,
XOXO
that's me.
2014. There we go.
Very scared.
Awesome. Very cool. I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
You'll be great, Gina.
Thank you.
Fantastic. That's Lanyrd, spelled kind of like Skinnerd, or kind of. I don't know.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah. Nice.
A little bit. See, I'm trying to work in the metal angle on almost everything today. This wasn't quite able to figure it out for QRware, but. QRware. There we go. QRware. All right. So this week's poll can be found at AAApoll.com/171. If you want to vote for your favorite app this week, check it out. AAApoll.com /171 and let us know what you think. We'll check in on the early returns and see where we're at. Player FM coming out with a lead right off the top. We'll see where this ends up.
Neck and neck, almost a die for metal again. Yeah, this is stiff competition this week.
We'll see what happens. But that is it for this week, folks. And yeah, Jason, Alan, it's been great having you both on the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Been a blast. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you both. It's been fantastic.
Right on. We hope, of course, to have you back again. Jason, let's start with you first. Where can people kind of follow your work online? Of course, you know, obviously finding the book. I know you mentioned that, but just refresh people's memory where they can find you as well as the work you do.
I'm pretty much on Google Plus all the time. I haven't posted the last few days because I've been working on updates for the book, but I'm always on Google Plus and happy to talk to people about pretty much anything. My interests are wide and varied, so we can talk sports, we can talk geekdom, we can talk movies, we can do books, you know, whatever. It's, you know, I'm lonely. Somebody talk to me.
Right on. That's plus Jason Salas on Google Plus. Excellent. Jason, thank you again.
Thank you. And
Alan Furstenberg, how about you? Where can people find your work and follow what you do?
You can find me at prisoner.com, and there are links there to my Google Plus profile, to Twitter, to a number of the presentations that I've made about Glass and Google Plus and other stuff that I present about. Yep, there I am. So that's the best way you can find me. It's also a link to my GitHub repository, which is where I store probably not all that much at the moment. And again, you can find me on Plus. Always happy to talk about Glass there or any other Google-related questions that I can help with.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Alan. Really appreciate it. And, of course, the book is called Designing and Developing for Google Glass. It's an O'Reilly book. Search for that as well. And, Gina, so what's new in your world? What you got going on?
You know, I got some things going on, but I'm not here on the Twit Network. I'm finally back from vacation. I'm glad to be back at work. You know, vacation was really good, but also when you're like, okay, this was fun, but I'm glad to be back at work. So it was both a good vacation and a good reentry. I'm working on ThinkUp, thinkup.com. You should check it out. It's a social media analytics for humans. There's a free trial, so you can sign in, check it out, no credit card required. And when I'm not working on ThinkUp and I'm not doing all about Android, I'm co-hosting This Week in Google, which airs on the Twit Network on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. And I'll be on tomorrow with Leo and Jeff, and we'll be talking about Google and all things cloud and, you know, maybe even a little bit of Android. So stop on by and watch us.
Excellent. Thank you, Gina.
And
Brian, the man in the shadows.
That's right. Witness protection is helping me out right now.
But this is your real name, so you know, you realize just being in the shadows doesn't quite work. Just saying.
I have made
just saying.
Huge mistake.
Just saying. What you got going on?
Well, when I'm not TDing this show, I'm working on a do-it-yourself thing called Know How on Thursdays with Padre. And we got some cool stuff coming up with RC cars. We just finished building, it's called a Lunchbox. And it's like this monster truck RC car. And we've pretty much annoyed everybody in the studio with it so far. And we broke it after about 15 minutes.
But if you want to. I thought it was cool.
It is cool. But we fixed it. I mean, that's why we bought two of them. So, if you want to check that out, tune in on Thursdays on the Twit Network or follow me at Cranky_Hippo on Twitter or Brian Burnett on Google Plus. So, but what about you, Jason, now that you're back?
Oh, is that it?
Oh,
is this that's it.
That's what we've been playing with.
Dang, look at that thing.
We ran over Leo's foot. He wasn't very happy about it.
Oh, that is the company too. That Tamiya, that's the one.
Yeah. So we've been working on that, and it's been a lot of fun.
Right on. As for me, you can find me at about.me/Jason Howell. I just put up earlier today a blog post for the new Misfits cover album that my friends and I did. So if you're a fan of the Misfits or just punk rock in general, maybe you don't like the Misfits. Jason appears to be a fan of the Misfits. I'm getting the devil horns again. Man, this
die, my darling.
man, is that on there? That's got to be on there. I don't know. It's 20 tracks. It's basically the best of Misfits, but we redid it ourselves. And you can check it out at yellowgoldmusic.com. Just click on the blogs link, and you'll see a little post for it. And it was a lot of fun to make, so I hope you enjoy it. It's free, so you can go get it now. But that is it for this week. Appreciate you coming back week after week. It's good to have you along in chat room. You guys are always awesome. Thank you for giving us our breaking news this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email at AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We're on Google Plus. We have a community there. Just search for All About Android. Show notes and past episodes, of course, can be found at our site, which is twit.tv/AAA. You can also find our episodes on iTunes and YouTube. And as always, you can find us live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, at live.twit.tv. We'll be here doing the show for you live. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye.